there are a lot of technologies out there for related to carbon capture. And usually direct air capture, some of the solutions there, they use adsorbents, which are solids, to capture the CO2 from air. One of the challenges with capturing CO2 from air is that the amount of CO2 in air is very small. It's around 400 ppm. And it makes it extremely energy intensive to capture CO2 from air, because you have to process large amount of air to capture very little CO2. So the capture efficiency is very much dictated by the CO2 concentration in the medium that you want to capture from. So for our technology that captures from industrial sources, we typically like flue gases that has between 3% and 20% CO2 in the flue gas. And the closer we are to 20%, the better we like it.
That was right from the middle of this week's episode. And what is the technology that our guest is talking about on this episode? Stay tuned for the full conversation. Hello and a warm welcome to yet another episode on the Mission Shunya podcast. Well, just feels really good to be back behind the mic and bring to you yet another conversation around this global transition to the zero carbon economy. The podcast now has over 50 episodes covering a range of topics, so feel free to explore the playlist on the web or any mobile device that you're listening to this on. And I am just a message away, which you can do by sending me an email to missionshunya@gmail.com, or you can connect on social media on Facebook, Instagram or Twitter. The handle is @missionshunya. Now let's get to this week's topic. Carbon capture and storage is something that I've been really excited about, and we did touch upon this with Dr. David Reiner in episode 48. On this episode, we go a little deeper, understanding the technology and how a project is coming along in the Nordic. For that, I have Jim Olsen, Chief Technology Officer from Aker Carbon Capture. Jim is an experienced research and innovation professional, and he has demonstrated history of operating in the intersection of industry, business, and scientific research. So without delay, let's get to the feature segment. Hello, Jim. Welcome to the Mission Shunya podcast.
Hello, hello.
Jim, let's look at the significance of carbon capture in meeting global climate goals. I mean, carbon capture is a technology that's still coming up, but why do you think it's very essential for meeting the climate goals?
And there are several reasons why carbon capture is important to meet the climate goals. But maybe we should start a little bit with what we are doing today to decarbonize the world. And the starting point is, of course, energy efficiency. And there's a huge potential to become more efficient when using our energy, and there's a lot of potential in reducing the carbon footprint by doing that. The second thing that has been getting a lot of focus lately is the shift towards renewable energy sources such as wind and solar energy, as you are probably well aware.
Yes.
And they will probably take the bulk of the decarbonization from now until 2050. But what we are realizing more and more is that if we want to succeed with the goals set forward in the Paris Agreement, that is not enough. We also need to have other means of decarbonizing the world to get the speed that we need in the decarbonization. And that's where carbon capture comes into play. We can deploy carbon capture in various industries that are difficult to switch out, it's difficult to switch out the energy source with renewable energy, for example. And also, there are industries that are difficult to decarbonize without other means than carbon capture. One example which Aker Carbon Capture is very involved in, is the cement industry. in the cement industry, a lot of the CO2 emissions comes from the process itself. So it's you can't reduce the CO2 footprint just by switching to a renewable power source. And then carbon capture becomes important. In a report from the IEA, the International Energy Agency, they reported that by 2040, some 2,400 million tons of CO2 needs to be captured from emission sources by 2040, which is a significant number, given that today I think we're capturing something like 33 million tons per year with the 18 or so carbon capture facilities that are operating around the world.
That is really interesting, and I get your point, and I think it's a valid point that you make. Carbon capture is required because there are certain sectors that can't decarbonize the traditional route. And another thing that it does, it accelerates the decarbonization, if I were to put it that way.
Yes.
So this rightly brings me to my important question. Aker as a company has moved on from a traditional oil and gas solutions to carbon capture. So before we get to the offerings that you do, how did this transition happen for your company?
Yeah, so in the Aker Group is a large industrial corporation with many companies doing many things. The carbon capture journey actually started in the Aker Group already in 1996 when we contributed to a CO2 capture and storage project on the Sleipner platform, which was one of the first CO2 storage projects where the CO2 was not used for EOR, and it was also injected into a well subsurface well offshore. And then some years after that, some smart people in the Aker Group started looking into carbon capture technologies. And from 2008, we ran a large, one of the biggest research projects in Northern Europe at the time, where we developed our technology in close collaboration with academic institutions here in Norway. And we had more than 30, 40 researchers working alongside our engineers to develop the technology. And we screened approximately, I think, 90 different chemical cocktails for the solvent that we now use in our to find the solvent that we use in our technology today. So there was a lot of activity, and this was back in 2008. And at this time, it was a lot of focus on carbon capture as well, especially in Northern Europe and in Norway. Actually, at that time, the Aker Group tried to start a carbon capture company once before, the market wasn't ready yet. So it wasn't ready to start to utilize this technology at that time. So after some time, the technology was brought back into a larger company called Aker Solutions, which is a large engineering company with more than 15,000 employees. The technology and the core team resided within Aker Solutions for a number of years, continuing, you know, to both develop the technology, but also to slowly mature the market. And then in the last 2 years or so, we saw that there was an increasing interest in carbon capture and an increasing interest in Aker's carbon capture technology. As we saw that, and we also saw that the sentiment around carbon capture changed in the last couple of years, people are becoming more positive to carbon capture as a part of the solution. And many of the large leading entities such as IEA and IPCC points towards carbon capture as part of the solution. And then we found that maybe this is the right time to try again. So we decided to launch the company Aker Carbon Capture, spin it out of Aker Solution. And this happened during the summer last year. We were working through the summer holidays, a lot of people at different locations scrambling to get this company up and running. And then we launched the company in the mid-July, and we were launched on the Norwegian Stock Exchange in the 26th of August, only a month after we started the company. So that was sort of the starting point of the new company. So it's a new company, but it's part of a sort of a longer history of technology development within the field.
That's an interesting story. Starting off in 2008 and then incorporating as a company in a year 2020. Well, 2020 turns out to be an interesting year for you when you incorporating this company. Although it could sound like it's a new company, as you said, entire work has gone through over the last decade and a half. So there's a lot of work that has gone into. So what is the end result? So when Aker Carbon Capture today, what does it offer in the carbon capture value chain?
That's an excellent question. We call ourselves a pure play carbon capture company. And what we mean by that is that we have a proprietary technology for carbon capture, which is the capture plant itself. We also have a lot of knowledge, know-how, and technology associated with conditioning of the CO2, such as compression and liquefaction, and also intermediate storage of the CO2 before it's transported to permanent storage. So, for example, we have a project that has started up this year called Brevik CCS here in Norway, where we're building the world's first carbon capture plant for a cement factory. There we take on the full scope, including the capture plant, the liquefaction plant, and the intermediate storage. And we design and build the capture plant and the liquefaction plant. And then, of course, we buy the storage facilities needed. So that's one of the offerings that we have. And this is what we call a big cache. This is large capture plants, typically 400,000 tons or more per year. And then we have a range that we call Just Catch, which is a smaller, more standardized solution.
Okay.
Which are smaller plants that capture 40,000 tons per year and 100,000 tons per year. And these are built in such a way that the processing part of it is included into a shipping container, so you can actually transport it by road or train to get it to the location it needs to be. And then the third product that we're offering is what we call the Just Catch Offshore, which is a capture plant that you can install on a FPSO, floating production vessel, to capture CO2 from gas turbines offshore. This is a more of a it's a modularized solution, but it's tailor made to each case. You can say. And of course, even though we are a pure play carbon capture company and we focus on the, let's call it the left side of the value chain, we still have knowledge and partners in the other parts of the value chain that enables us to advise our customers what to do with the CO2 after we have captured it.
That's interesting. So if I were to summarize, you have carbon capture solutions right from a modular ones that go offshore to big ones like the Brevik project that we are going to talk about later, where you can capture massive amounts of carbon as they are emitted in a source, basically. Am I right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's correct.
Now, let's talk about the technology part in a bit of detail. So all these are in parallel with some sources which emit carbon. Now, what is the technology behind carbon capture? And there might be a common question that how different is it from direct capture? And how does it work, the pros and cons?
Yeah, so we, our technology, we have what we call an absorption technology. It's a post-combustion capture technology.
Okay.
And we have then developed a chemical solvent that we circulate in our process in such a way that we have the flue gas coming into our system. And then we cool the flue gas so it gets the right temperature. And then we let it into a absorber column, which is 44, around 40 meters high. And the dimension depends a lot on the size of the how much CO2 you want to capture and how much flue gas you have. And then from the top of this column, we have our chemical solvent distributed and running in a counter current flow from the flue gas. And as the flue gas hits the chemical, it extracts the CO2, and the CO2 binds with our solvent. And then the solvent goes back into circulation, and then it comes into what we call a desorber. There we heat the chemical solvent to a certain temperature, and then it releases the CO2. And then the solvent is circulating in a closed loop, you can say. And then after we have released the CO2 from the solvent, it goes into a conditioning stage, which could either be just compression if you want to use the CO2 for something afterwards, or if you're going to have it for storage, it goes into a liquefaction plant where it's where it is compressed and cooled down so that it becomes liquid and ready for transportation. So that is the very short version of our technology. And there is a lot of technologies out there related to carbon capture. And you mentioned direct air capture. And usually direct air capture, some of the solutions there, they use adsorbents, which are solids, to capture the CO2 from air. One of the challenges with capturing CO2 from air is that the amount of CO2 in air is very small. It's around 400 ppm. And it makes it extremely energy intensive to capture CO2 from air because you have to process large amount of air to capture very little CO2. So the capture efficiency is very much dictated by the CO2 concentration in the medium that you want to capture from. So for our technology that captures from industrial sources, we typically like flue gases that has between 3% and 20% CO2 in the flue gas. And the closer we are to 20%, the better we like it.
That's very interesting number on 20%. And the other point about the efficiency of capture, direct air capture, I mean, it goes unnoticed that concentration of carbon in air is very insignificant, or rather very small, so that the technology per se is very inefficient in that. So that's a good point to note. Now, what are the disadvantages to this technology? I'm sure you would say that it has a lot of advantages, but let me put it that way. Do you think there are areas for improvement in the technology that you have?
Absolutely. For example, as I mentioned earlier, there are only 18 more or less larger projects associated with carbon capture today. And when you have had such a small market, it's clear that there is a huge potential for cost reduction with carbon capture. Carbon capture today is still an expensive technology. So we as a company work very hard to reduce the cost of our technology and our products. But this is true not only for the carbon capture technology, but for the cost of all the steps throughout the value chain, including storage. So that is currently a disadvantage that we need to deal with and solve the problem around it. And the other is that it is an inherently energy intensive technology. So when you have a solvent like ours or any of our any other sort of solutions where you capture the CO2 and attach it to some medium, you need to use a lot of energy to release the CO2 from that medium. And in some cases, that's not a big problem because you can in industrial complex have a lot of waste heat available. And then you can use that waste heat without really kind of paying too much for the energy cost. But in other situations, you may not have so much waste heat, and then you need to pay for your energy to deal with the carbon capture. So that's the other point that we really need to work on, is to make it to optimize the energy efficiency of carbon capture in the future.
That's a very good point. Again, very valuable insights. What he says, cost obviously is one, but the entire notion that generally could come up in discussions is that if carbon capture as a technology is available, why don't we deploy it in large scale? Of course, cost is one, but the other key thing is it is an energy intense process. So, I mean, there should be an equilibrium of how much energy can be spent to capture carbon.
Another point that is important to mention in terms of scaling up carbon capture as a solution is that today we have no place to put the CO2. Right? So there are some projects where they have used CO2 for enhanced oil recovery, and you can store the CO2 underground. And you have the Sleipner project that I mentioned before, where they're storing 1 million tons of CO2 per year underground. But if we are to reach that goal of 2,400 million CO2 captured per year, we need storage solutions to deal with the CO2, because we cannot use that in a utilization scope. It has to be stored safely underground for many, many decades to have an impact on the climate.
Again, another good point about storage, because it totally goes unnoticed. What do you do with the captured carbon? And I assume that this is going to be a challenging process in storage as well, because the location of projects, the location of the setup is also very critical to how the projects are built. Now, you did mention about scaling up. On your front, how long did it take for you to come up from the test bed solutions to the project, the Brevik Carbon Capture Project? So how long does it take for a carbon capture project to come on ground?
Yeah, I think we have to distinguish between what happened since we started our journey back in 2008 and with the situation today. With the Brevik CCS project, of course, this has been a quite long journey to mature both the solution and the public domain to accept that there is a level of public funding associated with it that needed to be aligned and agreed here in Norway. So that has taken some time. But what we see today is that we have a lot of queries today with projects that could potentially be realized around 2024-25. So now I think we're looking at maybe a 4 to 5 year turnaround for the larger projects. And then I'm predicting that this will go down as the storage facilities go online, and as the market matures a bit further. I believe that you will see that this time will go down.
Well, that's really encouraging to know that the timelines could in fact go down. Now, moving to the Brevik Carbon Capture Project. So how did this project come about, and what are the significant milestones that you aim to achieve in the project?
And of course, this project came about by the fact that our customer, Heidelberg Cement and Norcem in Norway were interested in carbon capture. So we conducted a series of studies for them, a feasibility study, concept study, and so forth, over some years. At the same time, a lot of work went into securing the necessary funding to realize the project, of course. And that was not something that we necessarily were the architect behind, but we, of course, supported the process in that. So there has been a journey there. And now we are in a situation where we actually signed the contract just before Christmas. And we started working on the project in January. So now we are working full speed ahead on the Brevik project. And the project is determined to be finalized in 2024. So that's the timeline. So we started now in 2021, and it will be finalized in 2024.
Do you have any intermediate milestones?
We absolutely have intermediate milestones associated with, setting the necessary purchase orders. There are milestones associated with the work that is going to happen on the site in terms of the civil work and site integration and these things. I don't have the dates for the various milestones, but of course there are different milestones that need to be met. But the project comes together and becomes operational in 24, and there is no sort of staggered approach to the operationality of it as such.
That's good to know. Now, moving to the question about the future, where do you see the carbon capture technology evolve over the next few years? So if I were to ask you this, so if you were to pitch a new project that is going to start in 2022, what is the technology difference that you would envisage, and what are the timelines associated with that project?
Since I started working with carbon capture last year, one of the things I've learned is that there is a myriad of technologies out there. And from all that I've seen and all the evaluations that I've seen so far, the technology track that Aker Carbon Capture is on, and also other players are on, the use of absorption with chemical solvents, I think is by far the most mature and robust technology. So I think that you will see a continuous improvement of this technology branch over the next 10 years, I'm quite certain. At the same time, I think you will see a lot of new or more immature technologies pop up and trying to reach the market. Whether they succeed will depend a lot on how they meet the both the cost curve and also the energy consumption associated with capture. And also the robustness of the solution, right, is important. It's one thing to do something in a lab or do something in a simulation, but the industrial qualification of a technology is a different game. So I think we will see a strengthening of existing technologies becoming more efficient, becoming cheaper. I think that's the primary track. And then I think maybe as the blue hydrogen domain is developing, I think we will see some new solutions associated with carbon capture from reformation of natural gas to hydrogen as well.
That's a very interesting point that you bring towards the end. That's good to know that you are also waiting and watching about the technology of blue hydrogen. Jim, on a final note, so all that you mentioned about the technology, the progress it's made is really promising. But all through the conversation, you also mentioned cost is going to be a challenge. From your point of view, from the industry's point of view, what is it that the governments can do? How essential is government support in this regard?
In this beginning, I believe government support is very important. One thing is what we do in Norway now, where the government is funding large parts of a large project. But I also believe that other incentives can be important in accelerating deployment of carbon capture, such as a CO2 pricing and things like that. So I think the various governments around the world needs to do something associated with that to accelerate the market. And then we will do whatever we can to make it cost efficient to deploy carbon capture.
Well, Jim, that's a very promising note to end the conversation on. So thank you very much for taking time and share this technology side of how the carbon capture system works and how projects are being built around the world.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Hope you liked the conversation. If yes, do drop a small review along with a rating on Apple Podcast. Your feedback helps me prepare better content. To sum up on the carbon capture technology, the cost is definitely a factor. And as scale picks up, we'll definitely see a reduction in cost. The other challenge, as Jim mentioned, is energy efficiency, which again is going to be a matter of time before it is optimized. And talking of time, we will also see the project life cycles come down significantly going forward. All in all, it is an interesting space to keep a watch on. And to keep a watch, all you have to do is continue to follow Mission Shunya. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, this is Girish Shivakumar, and as always, thank you for listening.